As Greater Sydney sets another record for the highest number of cases in this outbreak, Victoria and South Australia prepare to exit lockdown tomorrow. It's been viewed by many as proof the go hard, go early lockdown approach works. A shopping centre in Sydney's southwest has today been labelled a key venue of concern over fears patrons could have been exposed to COVID-19 for 11 days. Professor Nancy Baxter is a clinical epidemiologist at the University of Melbourne. Welcome to RN Drive.
Thank you for having me.
A further 172 cases detected in New South Wales today. The numbers keep going up rather than down. Do you think the outbreak has reached its peak?
You know, I've said this a number of times. I really hope so. It's hard to know. There still seem to be a large number of people out in the community infectious. I mean, today of those 172 cases, only 61 were in isolation for all of their infectious period. So that's, you know, 79 people who, well, more than 79. It's a large number of people who were out in the community when they're infectious. So that just means more cases are going to accumulate. So I'm quite concerned that the numbers are still going to go up from here. I know that's not what anyone wants to hear.
Yeah, I know. I mean, that number of cases active in the community while infection, that graph, that's the most worrying graph. It keeps going up. It's remaining stubbornly high and growing. I suppose the question everybody wants to know the answer to now is what can be done to bring that number closer to zero?
Well, you know, with numbers like this, with 172 cases and all of those people who've been in the community, it becomes a real challenge for your contact tracers. So obviously, contact tracing remains extremely important in terms of trying to get a grasp of and get control of the outbreak and get people into isolation. But with those kind of numbers, it really relies on everybody locking down. So everyone assuming they have COVID, assuming that others may have COVID, really limiting interactions and trying to stay in their house for as much time as possible and not interacting with anyone else. Because, you know, the contact tracers really can't, each day those numbers of people who've been out in the community, you know, increase, and you imagine how many people they've potentially been in contact with. So their job is impossible right now in terms of you know, doing what Melbourne was able to do, what South Australia was able to do, with just because they had much smaller numbers to deal with. Even so, they had tens of thousands of contacts to deal with. You know, you think about that. So with Victoria, with a total of 190 cases total for the outbreak, so that's, you know, they had almost as many in New South Wales today as they did for the entire outbreak in Victoria.
Yeah.
And they had over 20,000 people still in isolation today in Victoria. So you know, just imagine the number of primary and secondary contacts they're trying to track down in New South Wales. It just makes it so much more important that everyone just assumes they might have COVID and that other people might have COVID and just stays at home as much as they possibly can.
I mean, this is the most worrying outbreak in Australia since the long lockdown in Victoria last year. And it's tempting, of course, to compare the two, with the exception, the important exception being, we're talking about the Delta variant in Sydney. So does that mean that some of the measures that were put into place in Victoria last year, like the 5-kilometre restriction on travel and the curfew, might not necessarily, if they were implemented, reduce cases in Sydney this time round?
Well, I think the challenge is that nobody knows what of the suite of interventions that were done in Melbourne were the ones that worked. We do have evidence that that masks were a key part of that. But, you know, we don't know how much curfew helped. We don't know how much, you know, the 5-kilometer radius was better than a 10-kilometer radius. We don't know how much masks outside helped. So you don't really know how much each specific part of the interventions that happened in Victoria actually made a difference. And it's also important to think about context because, you know, things are different in Melbourne than Sydney. So things that worked in Melbourne may not work as well in Sydney and vice versa. But basically, the interventions are meant to decrease movement, so decreasing interaction between people. So that's key to prevent transmission from happening and to make contact tracing easier if someone is a case. Like if they've had less contacts, it's a lot easier to contain things, right? And then also, so that if you do encounter somebody when you're out, you know, shopping for your groceries, you know, you're protected from them by not really inhaling their air, limiting your contact, limiting the amount of time you're in their airspace, and having a mask both to protect yourself from others' exhaled air, but also to protect other people in case you're a case as well. You know, masks work both ways.
Yeah. This alert for the Campsie Shopping Centre, which was potentially an exposure site perhaps for 11 days, it's caused a particular alarm. I mean, how concerned should we be about this?
Well, you know, I wonder if they've kind of traced back some of these mystery cases to this shopping center. And, you know, this is one of the problems with the Delta variant. It's these fleeting encounters, which actually can lead to transmission. So these are encounters that people aren't going to remember. You're not going to remember having walked past somebody in a shopping mall. So it's not something that's it's possible to really contact trace individuals. It's not like you went out and had coffee with somebody and they're a primary contact. So it means you kind of have to identify everyone who's been in that area and get them all to isolate. And, you know, obviously this has been over a long period of time and it's quite historic. You know, it's July 14th would be the first day that they'd consider people exposed. So it's going to be hard to identify all those people. It's going to be hard to get them all tested and get them into quarantine. But obviously there's a significant amount of potential transmission that happened. And this is different, right? So this is the difference that Delta makes. So with previous variants of COVID-19, you know, we didn't really think shopping malls like, you know, obviously if you went to a store and you were talking to somebody in a store for a period of time, that could be a transmission. But we didn't think just walking past people could potentially transmit it. We used to think, remember when we used to talk about 15 minutes, you had to be with someone for 15 minutes. Well, that's all, you know, those rules have been rewritten by Delta. And so even, you know, people who were just shopping at this shopping mall may have, you know, contracted COVID.
Yes.
So it's going to be very important to try to track all these people down.
And just quickly and finally, on a related matter, airborne transmission is thought to have been how a Queensland man from China has caught the virus. Have authorities learnt, do you think, from previous cases?
Well, it's a great question. You know, there was a lot of expert doubt about the airborne transmission of COVID-19. You know, I think most people kind of understood that that from all the cases, like, you know, people getting it in another table, they were at a restaurant. You know, obviously it's not someone sneezing on their table, it's the air. So I think common sense kind of dictated that it was airborne. And unfortunately, the experts took a while to get there, but they have. So I think there's an acceptance that it's airborne. And I think now we need to start doing everything we can to reduce airborne transmission. So that includes, you know, the wearing of masks, maybe wearing better masks, right? Mm. So we're all wearing cloth masks, which are better than nothing, and surgical masks, but, you know, they have a lot of gaps in them. So perhaps thinking, especially for these essential workers in supermarkets, things like that, about having them in better quality, better fitting masks,
yeah,
that might be helpful. And the other thing we always miss is ventilation. So I think one of the things we can all do, I know it's in the winter, so it's harder, but if we can ventilate our indoor spaces, ventilate our workplaces that are essential, make sure we understand how well they're ventilated and do everything we can do to improve the ventilation, that's something that'll reduce risk as well.
Great to talk to you, Professor Nancy Baxter, clinical epidemiologist at the University of Melbourne. And just on the issue of masks there, I've been noticing actually watching the Olympic Games that some of the athletes have some very comprehensive masks going on. While New South Wales relaxed stay-at-home orders for some regional areas today, including Orange, Victoria tightened its cross-border bubble, shutting the border on a number of communities in that state. The city of Wagga, Hayshire, Lockshire and Murrumbidgee are now under the extreme risk zone, meaning residents will need to apply for a permit or exemption to enter Victoria. Here's the Victorian Premier Daniel Andrews speaking earlier today.
I take no pleasure in having to essentially lock out those four communities from Victoria, but there's a refusal to lock people in Sydney into Sydney, so therefore I have no choice but to make these changes. And it's obviously regrettable that we've had to do that all the way down at the Murray. I can't control the settings in capital cities other than our own.
Joining me now is the Mayor of the City of Wagga Wagga, Greg Conkey. Welcome to RN Drive.
Yeah, thank you, Paul. Nice. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, the city of Wagga Wagga is, as we know, 450 kilometres away from Sydney, and there aren't any confirmed cases. Given that, was this a pretty big surprise to you?
It certainly did come as a surprise. We only found out about it actually through the media from about lunchtime today. So it was a surprise, and the fact that we are not—we're part of that bubble, as you rightly say, up until midnight tonight, and then tomorrow we're excluded from that bubble.
So what practical impact will Victoria's so-called Ring of Steel have on your community? Give us an idea of that, if you can. Well,
bearing in mind that you're right when you sort of say that we can get a pass to get into the border areas, so we can do that. However, it does have a significant impact. Wagga's 125 kilometres away from the border, and we are the biggest rural and regional city in New South Wales. We have a lot of business connections with the city across from Warwick, which is Wodonga, and we also have a number of people here from this city who access health facilities in Wodonga. So we'll be impacted about that. People will have to get a pass to get into that area. It'll take some time to do it, it will be a problem for our city. Bearing in mind, as you mentioned, we haven't had a COVID-19 case here in this city for well over 300 odd days. So, or in this region actually for more than 330 days. So
I take it that you think this is an unreasonable imposition.
Look, it is. Look, I understand the situation. Sydney at the moment, we have 170 odd cases. I think have been determined in Sydney in the last 24 hours. That's a real concern, and I totally support the calls for having what they call a ring of steel around Sydney. Whether I'd probably refer to it as something else, but they should lock down Sydney and make sure that Sydney people do not travel to rural and regional New South Wales. We don't want people from Sydney in our area, and please stay at home. But at the moment, some are flouting those rules and regulations, and they are coming to rural and regional New South Wales, which is really a huge disappointment for me.
When were you informed of this decision? Were you given any forewarning? Is this the type of thing where the Victorian government, the Premier, gets on the phone and lets you know that this announcement's about to be made?
I think the Premier of Victoria has far more important things to do than jump on the phone and talk to me. He's got a lot of issues down in Victoria, and I fully understand that why he wouldn't get on the phone to ring me. No, look, we only found out about it through the media. So my office hasn't received any indication from Victoria Health whatsoever.
And so, given what is happening in both Victoria and New South Wales, do you think really now, and given that the way out of this is essentially vaccines, do you think there is some added weight to the argument that Victoria, where numbers, COVID numbers are going down, should send some of its spare vaccines to New South Wales to get them out of the bother they're now in?
Oh, look, that would certainly help. And congratulations to Victoria for what they've done and the numbers they have down there. So well done to Victoria. New South Wales, I think there's an issue here that a number of people in New South Wales are refusing to have the vaccine, which is a big concern. So we'll take, from my point of view, we'll take all the vaccines that we can get.
Okay, great to talk to you, Greg Conkey, the mayor of the city of Wagga Wagga. He's been my guest on RN Drive.